What song do you want to hear, Dan?
You are now listening to America's favorite craft beer podcast, a show that covers tricks, tips, and trends inside the craft beer industry. I am your host, craft beer enthusiast, Tom Simpson. Next to me, my co-host, a man with more untapped check-ins than you have steps on your Fitbit, the adjunct professor himself, Mr. Dan Holloway. Tune in, sit down, and drink up. And most importantly, thank you for joining us on another episode of America the Brew.
Guess I'll have to wait until then. And if I get drunk, well, I'll pass out on the floor now, baby. You won't bother me no more.
And welcome to Season 4, Episode 2 of America the Brewtiful. I'm joined this week by a friend of mine and friend of the show, John, who you may know from his Instagram account, Aria Barks, on Instagram. Welcome.
Thanks, Dan. As usual, there's probably going to be some dogs barking and now maybe even a baby crying or hopefully laughing. But we're broadcasting today on a Sunday, the day after the Day of Bliss at Equilibrium yesterday.
And I want to talk about that because we both went to the Day of Bliss. And I mentioned this countless times on this podcast, but my favorite thing about craft beer is the people, and the beer shares before releases are one of my favorite things about the craft beer community. And sadly, like, Equilibrium is one of the last remaining examples of this in the tri-state area.
Yeah, and Day of Bliss is always a lot of fun, and it was great, and people came out. But let's be honest, it was pretty easy to decide not to go. The high yesterday was 20. I mean, I was in thick socks and rubber boots, and my feet still were in pain. But lots of us were still there and decided to make the drive. And for us, I mean, most people had to drive a little over an hour to get there. And because of that, that's like what kind of awesome about those events is that people are still going out to them.
Yeah, I mean, and it's one – they're so few and far between now, the events where people go out and share, that it made people brave the elements, right? It was – the high, I think, in Middletown was like 17 on Saturday, and everybody was, you know, freezing cold. They had heaters, of course, in a tent, but the feet are the one thing that for whatever reason, every single person said, my feet are cold.
Yeah.
And you can wiggle your toes as much as you want, but it was tough. All right. We have a lot to talk about in this episode, but first we're going to crack our first beer. And this is from our friends over at Twin Elephant. The name of this beer, which I will inevitably botch, is Kaput Stuhl. It is a Schwartz beer. It's 5% alcohol. There's a reason that we're popping this beer, and we'll talk about that more in just a bit. Kind of one of the trends that we may see in 2024. But before we do that, let's talk a little bit more about Equilibrium, because there's two kind of big stories that are not the Day of Bliss and those bottles, and we'll talk about those later on as well. Let's start with this, the return of one of my favorite things ever, and that's the Wibbs.
The Wibbs. I mean, you, a year or so ago, we went there, and you had convinced me to try it, and I loved it, and for whatever reason, I just had never reordered them, but yesterday I had to get it, and for those unfamiliar with what they are ribs cooked as wings. And they fall right off the bone.
They're amazing. So it had kind of come off the menu. Apparently, you know, this is something that is kind of a pain to make. But for special events, I think they're going to come back. And they were absolutely delicious. I can't talk enough about it. So anytime Equilibrium has a special event, maybe message Equilibrium. Maybe message Michelle. Be like, hey, just making sure. You're going to have the Wibbs for this because they are totally worth it.
And they say that it's a pain to make, but it was only $10 for an entire, like, for the rack that you got. And honestly, they could charge way more.
They could. Let's hope they don't hear that part of the podcast. But yeah, they could almost charge whatever they want, and I'm going to get them. So that's great news from Equilibrium. But then there is a news story, kind of very local, but it's concerning. And that is, the secondary market is definitely a thing. People using proxies is definitely a thing. every once in a while, there are things that raise an eyebrow. So let's talk about what that is.
Bad actors. So there's a couple posts in the Equilibrium Bonfire group of people saying, have you gotten your Midnight it's the Midnight Crush, the Weldworks collab, Coconut collab, without wax? And it was just odd because I thought they always wax the barrel-aged ones, so thought nothing of it. But then someone actually posted a photo of three bottles without it, which rose another eyebrow because that was very odd. And when we talked to some people at Equilibrium this weekend, it sounds like three people have come forward noting that they received their bottles from one specific proxy. We won't go into that right now specifically, but it does raise some concerns about people taking advantage of other people in a proxy sense.
Right. And there's nothing you can do about it if you're a consumer, really, because you don't know necessarily who you're dealing with. You know, and you can, depending on what brewery. If you've worked with somebody a bunch of times, that's great. But a lot of times you're kind of working blind and trusting people, which I'm never going to tell people not to trust people, but sometimes you have to be careful. And this seems like a situation where something shady is going on here.
Yeah, it does seem. It'll be interesting if it continues to happen, if this was a one-off thing. Obviously, it's the fact that it happened to three different people makes it very – from the same person.
Correct.
Is what makes it very suspicious.
The one thing that we did hear – we talked to an employee from Equilibrium that is very aware of this issue, and they said that one of the people does have a waxed version of the bottle. They're going to do a side-by-side with the unwaxed and see what's up, because this could be kind of the Raji situation. And for those of you who are unfamiliar with that term, the Raji. So there was BBT came out. I mean, batch one BBT, batch two BBT. These beers were up to probably $800 on the secondary market at one point. There was someone who was drinking the bottles, and then what they were doing was repackaging it with other stout, sealing it, waxing it, sending it off, and they were called Raji BBTs. Is that going on here? I don't know. Maybe we'll find out.
And they're using the same black matte bottles. What are they? Are they doing the same thing, or are they grabbing a bottle from another brewery that does that and relabeling it? And then where are they getting that? Where's the profit in all of this?
I don't know where the profit is. Right, that's the issue. My guess is they are drinking the bottles and then filling it with something else and then capping it and sending it out. I don't know though. It's a bizarre situation, but it does seem like the fact that the only people that are getting the unwaxed bottles are coming from one proxy definitely is alarming.
It's a reminder to do your homework, but unfortunately, even in this situation, sometimes the proxies are in plain sight in some of the bigger RAS groups.
Yes. All right, let's talk about 2023, the year that was, right? Craft beer openings and closings. For the first time in a long time, brewery closings almost matched brewery openings. There were 385 brewery closings, 420 brewery openings. This is nationwide. And that's a huge change from about 5 years ago when it was almost five times as many openings as closings.
Yeah, the Brewers Association chief economist Bart Watson said that craft beer has just moved out of the golden age and is now behaving like a normal market, quote unquote. I kind of see it. We're seeing it even happening bleeding into this year.
Well, everybody's talked about it for years, the craft beer bubble. When is it going to burst? And you talk about that, it doesn't mean that people aren't going to continue drinking craft beer. It just means there's so many breweries. At a certain point, there's an oversaturation. So Bart Watson, again, Brewery Association chief economist, was further quoted as saying, yes, things are more challenging, but independent brewers still sell far more than one out of eight beers in the United States. Beer drinkers spend roughly one out of four of their beer dollars on a beer from a small and independent brewer, and the industry remains a source of jobs and community across the country.
Yeah, I mean, it just goes to, and I think this is going to be a perfect segue into the next segment, is that you really need to stand out. You can't really just be opening up breweries at this time that are not bound into something bigger than just hoping for a quick buck and making beer, as many head brewers probably tell you. It's not really a quick buck in the beer industry anyway,
no.
And it really takes a lot of grind. But you really need to have some uniqueness to you to have people want to come back or travel to you when they're in the area.
That's true. That's definitely true. To travel to a brewery, it kind of needs to be something worth it, because there's so many breweries, no matter pretty much where you are in the country, that you wouldn't have to travel that far to find a craft brewery anymore. But let's talk about it. Hop Culture came out with their 9 beer trends to watch in 2024. You kind of alluded to number one, so yeah. Let's talk about number one.
It's taprooms must embrace evolution, and people don't just want beer anymore. They want an experience. So is there food? Do they have events at the location like trivia or music and things like that? Do they have other things like disc golf or pickleball there? I'll let you talk about New Jersey in particular, because there's obviously been recent news on that, but there is a big push for that, because people aren't just going to drink. People are going for family occasions, for group outings and things like that. And people aren't just binge drinking at these breweries. They're going for a bigger experience.
That's true. And this shows just how big the New Jersey bill was in passing. Because one thing you're really seeing, and I talked about this with Tom Alphabet from the Tap House 15, there's a lot more what he would consider normies out there going to breweries. And if you are listening to this podcast, you are not a normie.
No.
Because you care about beer, and this is what we talk about for, a whole episode. It needs to be an experience. It needs to be something that you're going to go out for a reason other than just drinking beer, or the beer's got to be like unbelievable, right?
Damn.
So I've gone to a few different events at breweries, and you don't just see kind of all the same faces or the people that are just clearly the beer drinkers. It's a lot more than that. And a lot of the new breweries are really catering to that experience, at least in the state, and I'm sure everywhere.
Yeah. The second is for taking time for tradition. So like basically talking about old school things and like side pulls and historic styles and traditions. So there's obviously a big hazy push. People thought many, many years ago that it would go away. It's very clearly not anytime soon, at least.
Right.
But there is a much more historic and seasoned tradition that comes with beer. And I think especially some newer drinkers, or even for many cases, really old school drinkers, want to go back to those basics.
Sure. And I think it's also, if you went to a brewery 4 years ago, you might go to a brewery and 90% of the list was IPAs. And people want to try variety, and kind of some of these old school beer styles or something that they haven't seen before. Oh, that's cool. Let me try that.
I mean, this is a great example of what we're drinking right now, Schwartz beer from Twin Elephant. Now, granted, they've always kind of dipped into some of the other styles, but their menu at one point, especially early on, was 90%+ IPAs, or at least that's what I recall it being. Now you go in and it's kind of closer to 50%, and you've got things like this very delicious Schwartz beer.
Yeah, and then that's goes on to number three, perfect segue. Love for the larger lager landscape. So according to Untappd, the style light lager cracked a 2023 style leaderboard for the first time with just shy of 7.9 million check-ins last year. And Hop Culture, in this list of their trends, predicts that 2024 will be the year of the dark lager. So that's why we are drinking this right now.
Yeah, some of the top-rated dark lagers and Untappd include breweries that are within driving distance, at least in the Northeast. There's the Seed, Simple as Shadows, which is very delicious. Hill Farmstead, Rhetorica, Suarez, Rivers, Black Lager, Human Robot, Tamavi, 13, which is absolutely incredible, Fox Farm, Quiet Night, and Shillings, Carluv, 13.
Which, I'm going to say this, if you're looking for a dark lager, the Shilling Carluv 13 is probably the best one I've ever had.
Yeah.
It's unbelievably good.
I'll also give a shout out for Oak Flowers Gnaw is incredible as well. And it is on tap still right now. It was my favorite lager of all of last year.
And we'll talk more about Oak Flower a little bit later on in this episode. So we're talking about dark lagers coming back. The number four thing that they said, trends for 2024, West Coast IPAs are back.
I'm a little insulted by that. I thought they'd never left.
You are seeing them a lot more now, though.
It is true, though.
It's not just regular hoppies. And when you say hoppies, you think New England IPAs, mm-hmm. hazies. You're seeing the West Coast come back.
Well, and we'll talk about that also later, too. But even watching some of the big guys, like Other Half, making 60-minute IPA.
Yes.
Which is we got to cool. have a whole conversation on that. The fifth thing that hop culture brought up was hop hop hooray, and it's more of a allude to new hop products that people are trying, oils, extracts, etc. Lots of new pellets and lots of new hop varieties that keep popping up. I think I mentioned on one of your podcasts a while ago, my stepdad works at a New Jersey-based flavor and chemicals company, and he mentioned to me years ago, it was like, hop oils are the new thing, and I was like, people, I think, want the raw ingredients. I don't know what you're talking about. And it's a big moneymaker over there.
Wow. Wow. Good to know. Number six, they call Needy for Non-Alcoholic, and that's about non-alcoholic beers and hop waters mm-hmm. coming on to the market. We mentioned last episode, Forgotten Boardwalk will be closing at the end of February. They sell a hop water. Drownlands has a hop water. Treehouse has, I think, a non-alcoholic beer.
Yeah.
But you're seeing more and more of these things, which I think the perception on the non-alcoholic stuff back in the day was not just that, oh, non-alcoholic, so it's not good. They just weren't good.
Yeah.
Right? Non-alcoholic beverages were just not very tasty. And now I think there's a push to make them and make them well and make them something that you would want to drink.
Yeah. I mean, there's a sober curious movement that's basically going on right now. And it's not even just in beer. We're even seeing it with White Claw when they invented the non-alcoholic seltzer. I'm kidding. But they did come out with the non-alcoholic seltzer.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, that moves into number seven.
Number seven was ready-to-drink cocktails like hard lemonades. And Cape May launched a new seasonal hard iced tea, as did a New Belgium Voodoo Ranger hard-charged iced tea. But there's a clear movement of not just focusing only on beer. Treehouse is well ahead of this curve, too, in a lot of the spirits that they do as well. But ready-to-drink cocktails, too, just provides people with variety and not needing to have the full-on equipment to be able to have an entire bar at the ready.
Sure. And I don't know. This one is the one that really, to me,
it's a bigger thing, and I think it's more so it's for people like us that are bringing our friends to breweries that
sure.
are the average craft beer drinker, and that they would be cool to just not have another IPA or another lager.
Sure. Okay, that makes sense. Number eight, this one I love. Okay, this one is pushing new packaging, the highs and lows. They talk about the Stovepipe cans, 19.2% – I'm sorry, 19.2-ounce cans are coming back, and we saw that yesterday.
Yeah.
We were at the Equilibrium share. My buddy Grigor brought a Revolution Death Star, which came in a 19.2-ounce Stovepipe can. Super cool to see.
Yeah.
You know, but then that's kind of the highs. Let's talk about the lows, because this is something we've talked about here a million times.
Yeah, the other being what I would love to see way more, definitely, are 8-ounce cans becoming more popular. Evil Twin.
Yes.
Jeppe, are you listening still? Please bring those back.
Bring back the little
Please.
Cans. Those were unbelievably good. And also not really mentioned in the article, because you think when you think of cans and the regular sizes, you think of the 16-ounce cans, which have kind of dominated mm-hmm. the beer market for, man, I would say like 8 years now.
Probably.
But also the 12-ounce six-packs are coming back more and more, and I really like that. So.
Yeah, that'll be interesting if that trend does continue. I can see more so 12-ounce cans coming in the larger packaging, 24 and 30 packs. But one of the biggest economical reasons that a lot of brewers switch to the 16-ounce can is because, well, I just gave it away by saying it's economical. It's four cans. It's also less fluid, but you can charge it at a premium price.
Sure, sure. And lastly, and this is one that I'm like, again, eh. But brewery consolidation, they gave a bunch of examples that we've talked about here. River Horse acquired Dewclaw, Drake's acquired Bear Republic, and Smutty Nose recently acquired Five Boroughs. Yeah, this is something that's going to happen. It's something that's happened for years, and I think it's something that now, as we mentioned earlier, kind of some breweries struggling this kind of consolidation thing makes a lot more sense.
And that's what I was about to say. Of all those brewers you just mentioned, are some of the slightly older school first round of craft brewers that aren't necessarily as relevant in conversations anymore. So going back to the conversation of needing to be relevant and having things to get people to go to your brewer, you need to go down that route if you want to stay independent or at least not have to consolidate before you end up like one of these.
Sure, sure. All right, so coming up, you know, if you're out there and you have a loved one, Valentine's Day is coming up. It's not that far away, and you're probably like, why do we need to talk about this now? Well, if you need a Valentine's Day plan and maybe you have a sweet tooth like I do, you might want to figure out a way to fool your lover into celebrating Valentine's Day at a brewery. And Icarus came up with something that I thought was very smart. And if you want to try this on your significant other, maybe it'll work. They're calling it Drinking Donuts for Dinner. They have two sessions on Valentine's Day. Session one is from 1 to 5. Session two is from 5 to 9. And essentially what they're doing here is they are pairing different beers that they have with donuts. So we'll just go quickly through some of these. Pairing one is 5 ounces of their barrel-aged maple Vlad to be here with an apple cider donut that's rolled in cinnamon, drizzled in caramel, and topped with bacon and green apple compote.
Oh, I want a little bit of that. The second pairing was a 5 ounce of the Power Shaker Double Vanilla Oat Fluffed paired with a vanilla donut dipped in a tangy cream cheese icing with toasted coconut and peach glaze.
Number three is Respectable, paired with a vanilla donut dipped in vanilla bean infused glaze, topped with orange creamsicle buttercream and basil whip. That's interesting.
And the last one was a 7 years is worth the squeeze with boysenberry, marinberry, a lot of berries, and vanilla and marshmallow. But that's paired with chocolate donut dipped in marshmallow icing, triple berry jam, and dark chocolate whip.
That's a lot of... Like, that sounds like a really cool event, and I love to see kind of breweries getting a little, you know, creative here. And it's something to do on Valentine's Day if you don't have plans. If you think maybe you and your significant other are both into beer, it would be a no-brainer.
Yeah.
If not, I don't know anybody who's going to say no to that. It sounds like a really cool idea.
Yeah, and it's nice that they're doing like a mix of styles too, because it's not just a stout dominant thing. Like some of those fruited beers, and even like the I think one of them is like the milkshake that they have, right? It's just nice to see those paired with something.
Yeah. Now you found something else that's not local that kind of is in this vein of like ahead of Valentine's Day. This is something you can do.
Well, as some people are used to getting proxies for some of the more far out west brewers, Weldworks just announced, at least on Eventbrite, they haven't announced it on their Facebook page or their Instagram or Facebook page yet, but they're doing a Valentine's Day set. It's called the Cuvée de Chocolatier 3-box set. And it's actually interesting. It's 3 different stouts aged in a variety of like the higher end, well known barrels. But one's aged in conditioned on caramel, one's in coconut, and one strawberry. Sounds normal, but the set you can add an add on for a $59 three truffle pairing provided by a local chocolatier there. So now going back to what we just talked about, even with hop culture, it's finding unique ways to do their normal beer release in a seasonal type of way, but adding some kind of local element of probably a local chocolatier that maybe people in like the central Colorado area would know to have a chocolate pairing with your beer.
I mean, sign me up. Two things that I really like. Also, just, you know, something if you want to do, maybe you do a little exchange with your loved one. You want to go to a beer fest. One that's coming up in Jersey City on February 11th is the Brewsology event. I did not go last year. I was surprised at how many people told me that it was worth going to.
Yeah.
And that it was super fun. So that's on February 11th. Maybe you trade that for some swanky dinner. You know, everybody's happy. Just some ideas to throw out there. All right, coming up after the break, we have local releases. That's coming up after this.
Because they live
Welcome back. Season 4, Episode 2 of America the Brutiful. It is time to talk about the coolest new beers in the area. And before we do, let's start with a beer. So tell us what we're about to drink, John.
We are about to drink Other Half's first anniversary, which was a beer that they never released in cans up until the first week of their 10-week anniversary release for their 10-year right now. But it is a double dry hopped triple West Coast IPA.
Triple West Coast. Okay. And we mentioned in the beginning some of the trends for the next year. And one of them may be the return of the triple, of the West Coast. And I think we're already seeing that, right? Like, that's something that we've already kind of been seeing more and more breweries releasing West Coast IPAs.
No, and obviously 10 years ago, this was the style. And yes, that's why they made it for their anniversary. It's nice to see it back.
Yeah. So let's start with Other Half. Let's talk about some of the other releases that they have come out with recently.
So this was the 7th week of their anniversary, 10-week of anniversary releases, and they re-released their 7th anniversary IPA, which was a triple IPA with Citra, Citra Cayo, Matueca, Rawaka, Cashmere, and Equinox.
So they also had a few cool different – I mean, we're going to go through a lot here, but let's talk about this one, Fry Yay. It's a collab with Cycle. It's a 14.6 bourbon barrel-aged imperial stout conditioned on hazelnut, coffee, and vanilla.
The next one, Space Brunch, which I accidentally read as Sunday Brunch the first time I saw it. But it's Space Brunch, which is a barrel-aged stout that they did collabed with Toppling Goliath. A 13.2% BA Imperial Stout, conditioned on cloud cover coffee, which is Sam from Other Half's Coffee, maple syrup, and freeze-dried ice cream.
And now let's talk about some of the Freaky Friday releases. The first one is kind of one incredible of the cooler things that they've done, and that's 60-minute IPA. Basically, it's Other Half brewing the classic Dogfish Head recipe that got so many people into craft beer.
This is a beer that over 10 years ago, most of us that are like super into it and have worked craft beer drinkers 10 years ago would be a solid go-to next to like Stone IPA or things like that. And to see now Other Half 10 years into existence making that beer is kind of mind-blowing.
Yes. Listen, that's super cool. I'm really kind of excited to try that beer. They also did Psycho Sue. IPA Freaky Friday tweak of Toppling Goliath's Pseudo Sue. They made this the HDHC version, loaded with Citra, the high density hop charge. Again, another beer I want to try. These are really cool ideas that they're doing, and you know all these beers are going to be really good.
The next was Insert Hip Hop Reference Here, which was a triple IPA collab, not collab, but it was actually collab too, which is a Freaky Friday of a Monkish and Trillium beer. It's just a classic double IPA with Galaxy.
And then finally, Special Combo Number 4, Death by Broccoli, Imperial IPA, originally brewed at the Vale and hopped with Simcoe, Mosaic, and Citra.
Originally called Brock Simpson.
Yes. Well, that
before the season to six.
Yes. I was I've talked about it before. That was one of the beers I was most excited in because there were all these different merch like that was going to be available. Brock Simpson glass. And I'm like, I need to get it. This is the best thing ever. And yeah, that didn't happen.
This release in particular was pretty good for them. I ended up buying the box solely just to get the 60-minute IPA, to be completely honest. But it was all of those IPAs we just listed, plus last week's HDHC Mouthful of Citra.
Oh, nice. Or
Mouthful of Diamonds, which was the foam collab. I'm very excited for that.
Let's talk about Equilibrium now. And we talked a little bit about Swiss Bliss and Swiss Bliss Grand Royale, but why don't we talk about – they did a collab with Other Half, or a Freaky Friday type thing with Other Half.
Yeah, they were awesome and also participating in this and doing an HDHC Double Citra Daydream. Awesome to see them also try to do the HDHC process, which was many breweries were already doing, but Other Half kind of figured out a name for it. But we tried it on draft. It was pretty good.
I thought it was great.
It was honestly one of their best beers, one of their best IPAs of late, and pretty spot on to the original recipe.
Yes, even with adding that bit of lactose. I've said it before, I'll say it again, maybe my favorite IPA of all time, double dry hop, double Citra Daydream. This one, HCHC, a little bit of lact. It was it was very, very good. But let's talk about the big boys that Equilibrium released. We were both there for the releases, so let's get into it.
The barrel-aged Swiss Bliss in particular, again, we talked about it a million times, but it is an Imperial Stout with Swiss chocolate, almond coffee, almonds, and marshmallow. And this one was aged in Willet barrels for 25 months.
And then the other one, we mentioned the Grand Royale, and this is that kind of special treatment that Equilibrium does with their beers. A little bit about it. This one was 40 months in the making. So it was in Heaven Hill barrels. Again, we talked about the treatment, but they also have that macadamia nuts in there. Really spectacular beers.
Yeah, batch one of that was one of the first beers that I actually literally felt like was perfect. I think it's more so that I had it again, so it didn't taste as perfect, but it tasted incredible. I'm very happy to have a bottle.
Well, let's also, you know, we'll try that one in bottles too at some point.
We might be different.
When we have it on draft after having 40 different beers in a beer tent in 17-degree weather, palate fatigue may have set in. So very interested to try that in a bottle.
Let's just go complete opposite style. We've got Tomorrow they released, which was a 4% Citra Mosaic American Pale Ale.
And they also released Cookies and Cream Pop, big base stout with crushed sandwich cookies and a healthy dose of Madagascar vanilla beans, cocoa nibs, cake mix, and a touch of lactose. That one, as well as the HDHC Double Citra Daydream, both made it to Tavor. So that's kind of, you know, interesting. People from all around the country will be able to try those if they want.
Another one, or for another brewery, now more local, this place called Tron, Cerebral Fortress, which was a 9.2% hoppy ale. But the more interesting thing was what they released with it, which was a web shop, which I thought was pretty interesting.
That lasted like 2 days.
Yeah, so they posted on Thursday night that they were open in person and that by Friday at some point, I don't know what time they ended up closing it, maybe it was 24 hours, you could buy a set of different t-shirts, crew necks, long sleeves, a couple – it was all mostly – I think it was all shirts. But I think the thing for them is what was easy for them. It definitely looks like it's print to order.
Yeah.
And they were using the artwork from their previous cans. It's a pretty great idea. It was shipping only, so they don't have to even deal with it. And people go nuts for that stuff.
How many did you buy?
I bought one.
Really? Only one?
I bought one. And it's the old original artwork, the gold throne on the black crew neck. It just looked pretty awesome.
I'm surprised. I thought you would have been like, here goes my paycheck. and actually, everything was pretty well priced. There was nothing that was too crazy. I thought there might be some price gouging there, but there was not. So really cool to see from them. Let's also talk Tin Barn. They released a new beer called Green and Gold Double New England IPA Hop with Citra and Simcoe Hops.
Also local is Icarus. They released a 2024 barrel-aged Maple Vlad to Be Here, which I believe might be the same thing we just talked about with the pairings for Valentine's Day. But it was brewed with maple syrup before being barrel-aged for 32 months in Templeton Rye and Heaven bourbon barrels. After it was aged, it was conditioned with Madagascar vanilla,
Ceylon cinnamon.
Thank you very much. And Guatemalan coffee. I'm skipping some words.
Yes. So at the share at Equilibrium, this came up a few times from different people talking about this beer, and that's from Magnify. It's called One of One. It's a 13.5% Imperial Stout that was triple mashed and had an extended boil. It was then aged for 16 months in a single Willet bourbon barrel before being conditioned on bourbon barrel-aged vanilla. This one also hit Tavor. I don't know how many they got because they said super limited. I mean, we're talking about one barrel where all these bottles came from. So my guess is they probably got like 40 or 50 bottles for Tavor and the rest for the public. But this one sounds really cool, and I know a lot of people were actually talking about it at the Equilibrium share. So
yeah, and the name alone, I was like, there's only one bottle. But now I get it's one barrel.
That would be amazing. That would be amazing if they just made one.
Well, they'd do it for charity.
Well, you could do that. Yeah, true.
Another one that they released was Solid Gold Good Times, which is a double dry hopped Imperial IPA hopped with Citra in the Whirlpool and then double dry hop with Citra and Nelson.
On fire. 10% triple IPA with Citra, Citra Cryo, Nelson, Mosaic, Mosaic Cryo, and Sabro.
Only Time Will Tell, which was an 8.6 double dry hopped IPA with Wa'iti, Mosaic, Amarillo, and Mose and Mosaic Cryo, and contained some lactose.
They also did Trade Secrets collab with Trap Rock Brewing, 8% Imperial IPA brew with Mosaic Incognito on the hot side, and double dry hop with Topaz, Motueka, and Yarolo hops.
That's really cool. Like to see some Trap Rock mentions here.
Yeah. I remember my birthday years and years ago, an ex-girlfriend of mine took me to Trap Rock for, you know, and it was cool. There weren't that many breweries in New Jersey, and they have really good food there. So cool to see them kind of do that because, you know, one of the old school kind of beer places in New Jersey.
Yeah. Ghost Hawk released something called Ghost Talk, which is a brand new dedicated IPA hopped with Galaxy, Mosaic, and Centennial. Do you want to talk a little bit about this?
Sure. So Steve, who's the owner, founder, dedicated this beer to the loss of his brother Danny. Proceeds from Hawk Talk will be donated to the Raptor Trust in his memory. If you aren't familiar, the Raptor Trust is a bird rehabilitation facility in Millington, New Jersey. And if you're not familiar with Danny's story, it's the reason that Ghost Hawk got its name. You know, Danny was somebody who was went too soon, right? And there is a hawk that kind of always seems to be in Steve from the brewery's vision all the time. And his brother loved hawks, and it's the reason that the brewery got its name. And it's really a touching story.
I love to see that, just trying to pull through some personal things into that and really makes the community feel connected to the company. Timber released Fields of Lumber Blend 2. This was a blend that included Imperial Stout aged for over 2 years in Weller 12-year and Elijah Craig 12-year barrels.
We talked about Oak Flower before. Ring 8, 5.5% hazy pale ale, dry hopped with Idaho Gem.
I'm going to have to go grab that. Obercreek released Cadence of Old, which was an old-age grizzet that was fermented and aged in oak and then aged again over Chardonnay grape pomace.
Root and Branch, they made two new beers for the week. Cold, which it definitely has been in the East Coast. An Indian Pale Lager brewed with German Pearl hops, fermented cold with German lager yeast for 2 weeks. Heavily dry hop with Citra hops and lagered for an additional 2 weeks post-dry hop.
And they also released The Work of Art in the Age of Mechanical Reproduction, which was a multi-oat wheat double IPA that was dry hop with a duo of hops that they got from the U.S. and from Freestyle.
Evil Twin NYC, let's talk about them. They did two beers that I want to try. I'm not sure if I will be able to, but one of them is called Corner of George Street and Chemont Road. Collab with Trillium, an IPA double dry hop with Citra and Columbus hops.
And they also released Supreme Leader Marlin, which is a hoppy quadruple IPA.
And let's go back to Jersey. Twin Elephant, Kick Theory, 7.7% American IPA with Citra, Waimea, Motueka, and Southern Cross.
Oh, their beers always sound so good. In New Jersey, still too, Brick City had a couple different drops. The first was Double Bangers, Gathering Clouds, which was a collab with Twin Elephant. And it's very similar to the other half's Freaky Friday, but Bricks does their own take essentially on the Twin Elephant's beer. And if you've had Twin Elephant's Gathering Clouds, very delicious rotational IPA that they make. But the beer is a 7.5% double dry hop. 7.5% double IPA, double dry hopped with Ra'aku, Motueka, and Vic Secret. Is this something that they've done before?
They have. I think this is the third one that they've
done. Awesome.
And, you know, they tweak it a little bit because I think Gathering Clouds is lower ABV. I think it's a single IPA. They made this one a double, but they talk to the other breweries, take their recipe, and kind of make something very similar, but usually one or two little tweaks. So, you know, really interesting to try that one, and I love the fact that they're doing that because it's something new, interesting, different. They also did Tape Echo, 8% double IPA, double dry hop with Citra, Mosaic, Nectaron, and Simcoe Cryo using their what they call low-temperature hop burst technique.
Speaking of bursts, Tropical Hop Burst is a 6.5% New England IPA double dry hopped with Nectaron and Luminosa.
Conclave, we've talked about them. Curious to see if they make the top beer drops list this week with their triple. But this is the new one for them. It's called Tamor, 5.9% milk stout condition on cocoa nibs.
Over at the Snake Den at District 96, Completely Misunderestimated is a double IPA with 8% that they've re-released. And I'm sure with the upcoming election, there is going to be tons of content for new beer.
Oh, yes. There will be so many beer names coming out of there. Noble Savage, frequent brewery on the top beer drops list. They made Prismatic Lightning, 7.4% IPA, dry hopped with Wakatu, Wamea, Southern Cross, and a heavy charge of Nelson from Freestyle Hops.
Deep Fried Beers and had announced that they had a double beer release. And that's right. What I was surprised with is that they were both sours right. And not IPAs. But the first was Sour Patch Works, 8% ABV, double of fruited Imperial Sour, conditioned on 3 pounds per gallon of raspberries.
And they also did Sour Patch Work, 3. 8% again, Pina Colada inspired smoothie sour, conditioned on 3+ pounds per gallon of pineapple, lime, and coconuts.
That sounds fun.
Yeah, and now he's got his own spot up, you know, up in somewhere north of us, I think near Albany.
Yeah.
And so you'll be seeing more and more releases from Deep Fried, so good luck up there.
Marlowe released My Little Shadows, which is a 5.4% German-inspired dark lager Schwarz beer that was lagered for 8 weeks at near freezing temperatures, not difficult to do about now.
Correct. Wild Air did a very fun sounding sour called Cranberry Apple Sangria Poetic License. It's a sangria inspired sour with, you guessed it, cranberries, apples, cinnamon, and Niagara grapes.
Back to Jersey, we've got Jersey Cyclone, Midnight Grind. They released a 3.2% barrel aged Imperial Coffee Stout.
13.2.
What did I say?
3.2.
I'm still, I'm on dad mode.
Okay.
Sometimes I just say things and don't even realize it.
And we've talked about the cold. We've talked about how cold it's been here in the Northeast. Ramstein has did a little sneaky Instagram tease of the cold weather with hints at the Icebox release this year. For those who have not had the Ramstein Winter Wheat Icebox, or I forget what they call it now, I think, but basically they will only do this. They do things in a very traditional manner. When the weather does not go over 32 degrees for 3 straight days, they get their regular Doppelbock in a keg, put it outside so that it is exposed to the freezing cold temperatures, and then the beer will freeze. You know, kind of the water part of the beer will freeze. That gets scraped off, and what you have is this really intense Icebock, right? And it's one of the best Icebocks in the world. It's going to be coming out soon, if that was any indication. So I'm looking forward to that release when it does happen.
It's been cold enough, and you always bring it to shares.
Yes.
I had never had it before. You had brought it to something a couple of years ago. We probably drank it in freezing cold temperatures. But yeah. it is definitely very different. It is high octane, let me tell you.
Yes.
But it is very good.
And it's a good share beer, because I have had most of a growler once, and you know. I was like Rip Van Winkle waking up much, much later than I expected.
Well, enough on releases. There is one more thing that I think we wanted to talk about, and that is the New York City Opening Bash.
So that's going to be on Saturday, February 24th. VIP is 12:30. The regular general admission is 1:30. Let's talk about some of the New York breweries that are scheduled to pour.
Yeah, there is a long list of the New York City-based breweries like Evil Twin, Finback. I believe I saw Other Half was on there, Grimm, Wild East. And another place that we had to really look up, Kato Sake Works. And it looked like there is a Brooklyn-based sake company that is also attending, which, again, talking about the expansion of palates and people trying to explore different things. It is so cool to see this festival, which we were talking about during the break, that we both went to some of the earlier ones when it first came out back in super big hype. Monkish was there. Hudson Valley at the peak of like their hypeness was there. It's very cool to see it now expanding to some other types of alcohol styles that people are going to hopefully sip and enjoy.
Yeah, I think it's super cool. People are going to be going to this. They're going to – a lot of the breweries that will be there, people have had before, you know. We especially talking about the New York City breweries. That's what this is most catered to. Everybody's had beer from Other Half, right? Everybody's had beer from Grimm, Finback. Many people may have never even had sake before, or if they did, they just had it at, you know, a hibachi restaurant or sushi restaurant, and they don't know much about it. Now they get to try it, and I think that's a really cool thing that they're doing. We talked about some of the New York breweries. Let's talk about some of the breweries from out of state that are going to be there.
Tons of great breweries: Fidens, Forest and Main, Fox Farm, Homage, Human Robot, Phase 3, which I think is a pretty big name on here too, just like outside of more of the realm when there's a lot of hops that we're talking about here and lagers. Root and Branch, The Seed, which I love to see on here, and Suarez. So, and that's even just not even half of them that we listed. There's some Jersey breweries on here. There's some up and coming like Schnecker on here. So it's just really nice to see that this fest, while the names are changing, it's bringing in some of the outside community too.
Yeah, and it's a great festival. Again, we both mentioned we've gone to it. Got nothing to do on February 24th. Make your way into the city. It'll be a good time. All right, coming up after the break, we will be joined by Chase from Top Beer Drops talking about the number 10 best beers of the previous week. That is coming up after this. Try to be best because you're only a man and a man's got to learn to take it. Try to believe, though the going gets rough, that you got a hand tough to make it. History repeats itself, try and you succeed. Never doubt that you're the one, and you can have your dream. You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best around. And nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best around. And welcome back. Season 4, episode 2 of America the Brewtiful. It's that time of the show. We talk about the highest rated beers of the previous week. So the week we're looking at, January 6th to January 12th, 330 new beers released from the top 440 breweries around the U.S. And to talk about the top 10, as he always does, Chase from Top Beer Drops joins us. Chase, welcome.
Thanks for having me, guys.
All right, so let's start with number one. Number one is from a brewery that we talked about, I think, in our end-of-year episode as one that would be popping up more and more. I've had a lot of beers from them. They've all been excellent. Take it away. Tell us about number one.
Yeah, sure. Number one is a brewery everywhere out of Orange, California. They created an imperial stout. Looks like it's got a ton of different pistachios in there, roasted pistachios, raw pistachios. It's called Do You Hear the Empty Spaces? And at the time of profiling the list, it was sitting at a 4.77. Wow. Let's take a peek and see how it's rating today. 4.72. So it's still holding up. So yeah, looks awesome. I don't know if it was member only release. I'll have to check my notes on that one, but yeah, anything with pistachios, I'm a sucker for.
Yeah, their beers are incredible. We had – do you remember what the one was we had yesterday from everywhere?
I don't remember the name of the beer that we had.
But it was just –
I think it was called Yesterday something.
Yeah. Yeah. But their beer is – they're killing it.
All right. Yep, go on.
Oh, sorry. I was going to ask, was that the hot chocolate-inspired one? I want to say that was on the list.
Now you're going to make me go look for it. Oh, yeah, it was – here we go. Does Yesterday Still Exist?
Yeah, okay. I'll check and see before we hop off a call here. I think I profiled them, or that particular beer, maybe a month ago.
Yeah, and it's, yeah, with Pandan Marshmallow and Tahitian Vanilla.
That's it. Was it good?
It was probably one of the better beers from Swiss Bliss Day yesterday.
Yeah.
Nice. Okay, cool.
So, yeah, number two was the Corporate Ladder Double Barrel Aged Vile Maximum, which is a 14% Imperial Stout with a rating of 4.61.
Now, Corporate Ladder was another beer. We had another special Corporate Ladder at the EQ share.
Yeah.
So actually a few of the breweries that are on this week's list, we had not the beer, that is on the list, but stuff from the brewery. But why don't you tell us a little bit about this one? Corporate Ladder, obviously no stranger to the list.
Yeah, no stranger at all. It looks like this one was 18 months in bourbon barrels, maple syrup barrels, ex-bourbon maple syrup barrels, to be specific, and then transferred to E.H. Taylor barrels for another 6 months. It sounds like an awesome barrel-aged stout experience for sure. And it went up in rating since I profiled it. So it's 4.61 at the time I made the list. And now it's sitting at 4.62 with about double the rating. So
great.
Good stuff.
And we talked about the number three drop last week. John has it in front of his hand. So this is from Oak Flower. It's called High Noonan. It is a 7.2% ABV New England IPA. And John, tell us a little bit about this one, because you went and got it, and I'm very happy to try it because I was not able to get to the release.
Well, for people who are following me on Instagram now, Ari Barks Brews, really, Oak Flower is my new Troon. It is where I go and spend most of my time because it's a lot closer, and when you have a baby, you can't really get an hour away. But High Noonan is a delicious hazy IPA. They do mention that it is Mosaic at Simcoe, Brew One in Amarillo. But it was dedicated to one of their OG customers, very loyal member there that had to be – who was given a proper send-off before he was went to go and serve. So it is a really good honor to them. I think they're very deserving of being on this list. This beer is absolutely delicious. I honestly like some of their other ones even more, but it's just so cool to be able to see them on this list, especially just a year after they opened.
It's awesome. I love the name on this one too. High Noonan, it's pretty funny. It sounds like the guy's name is or last name is Noonan.
Yeah.
I like the homage to High Noons too. I think that's cool.
All right, let's talk about number four as we sip on this guy.
Sure.
This is one that you said would probably make the list. Tell us about it.
Yeah, certainly. So this number four is Long Live out of Providence, Rhode Island. They had a 9th anniversary, and this was released, this Imperial Stout called Otto Noddy was released right next to a big triple IPA. And it was sitting at a 4.56. It looks like it was, also conditioned on bourbon and apple brandy barrels with coffee beans, hazelnuts, vanilla beans, toasted coconut, and marshmallows added. So I actually I got my hands on a bottle of this, but it hasn't been shipped yet. So in theory, on paper, I have a bottle of this, but I haven't haven't cracked it.
I haven't tried any of their stouts, but I know that they're – or I probably have had it at Shares, but they always look so good.
No, they're very solid. John, looks like number four had a tie.
Number four was a tie. This one was with Southern Grist, and it was it's called hashtag insert juicy jewels, which was a 8% double IPA with a 4.56 rating.
And usually when we hear Southern Grist, I still think stouts.
Yeah.
You know, they make some good stouts, so interesting to see them on the list with an IPA.
Yeah, big time. I think I actually accidentally snubbed the collab on this. I believe this was a collab with Hot Butcher for the World. I mean, I'll look that up really quick while we're
Now so it makes a little more sense.
Yeah, for sure.
It is. I just checked.
Sorry, say that again.
No, it was with Hot Butcher. You're right.
It was. Okay, cool. Yeah, so that probably tipped them over the edge a little bit. I think Hot Butcher is definitely known for, obviously, hops and their IPAs. So.
I want to talk about number six. This is a brewery that's made the list sporadically through 2023. Again, a brewery that usually makes the list on a style that is not the style that they made the list this time. So tell us about number six, Chase.
Yeah, sure. I want to say this is their first time making it with a stout, but Frequentum Brewing out of Canandaigua. Do you guys know how to say that out of New York?
So I think it's Canandaigua.
Okay.
About this brewery, okay, because I've been there before. right now is not the right time to do this, but take note if you're out there and you're in the tri-state area. A trip you definitely should make is up to the Finger Lakes. Again, I would not do it in January or February, but you can really kind of make a really cool beer trip out of it. There's a ton of breweries, but more wineries than breweries. But you can hit the Tin Barn Finger Lakes location. The Frequentum location, I would say, is about an hour north. You can hit other half the Finger Lakes location, not that far. And then, I mean, this is a very kind of aggressive day, but you can also hit from other half Finger Lakes. You can hit Mortalis, make your way back. It's a good little kind of beer day that you can have for yourself if you go up to that area.
Nice. Yeah, I like it. Yeah, it looks like this was a affogato-inspired imperial stout. So coffee stout. It looks like Working Class Coffee was their collaboration coffee roaster that they worked with. Yeah, looks like they incorporate, obviously, coffee and then some lactose-free vanilla ice cream powder in there as well. So probably an interesting flair on a coffee stout with their background in what they do with fruit and sours.
I'm not going to take number 8 away from John, so I'll talk about number 7, and that is from The Brewery, and it is their 2024 version of First. I had the first version of First years ago, which was excellent, and that one was a collab with Three Chiefs. This one, it does not say it's a collab with anybody, but it made the list. And again, Brewery making the list again, which I think, again, is pretty cool to see because you think of them more of an old school brewery when people were trading all these bottles for Black Tuesday and Mocha Wednesday. Cool to see them back on the list.
Yeah, absolutely agreed. Yeah, I saw it. They put out a video within the last day or two talking about the first version of First and how it was so limited that they only had a bottle per person for people even in the brewery, like working within the brewery. So, yeah, it's I can't see anywhere to your point that it's another collab with Three Chiefs, but I'm sure similar, if not the same recipe.
Number 8 was this little-known brewery called Troon Brewing. Sorry. heard of them. Catalytic Abyss, another one of their very delicious double IPAs at a 4.49.
Very cool.
I want to say this one also increased in ratings. At least it did when I checked it earlier in the week. Yeah, 4.53 is what it's jumped up to. So, yeah.
Which is rare. I don't think you...
I agree.
Big time.
Yeah.
Big time.
All right, number 9, you know, this is cool because, again, this is a brewery that I think, you know, a few years ago would have made the list a lot. You don't see them that much anymore. They still put out some really good beer. Tell us about number 9.
Sure. Number 9 is Microphone Brewing out of Elk Grove. We'll call it Chicago. It's basically a suburb of Chicago, Illinois. And they made the list with Sweet Drams Volume 2. It's an Imperial Stout aged in Pappy Van Winkle barrels for 27 months. And then also 15-year Kentucky Straight Bourbon whiskey barrels as well. So, yeah, I'm sure that is an awesome, awesome beer.
And then a tie for number 9, the last one on the list, was Root and Branches, the A. Sayer, January 2024, Batch 8, which is a 10% triple IPA with a 4.48. I'd actually be curious to know, and I'm not sure if you even keep track of that kind of data, but Root and Branch, Untappd, they're very notoriously known for having the different batches with the different months and years and how frequently some of those those beers get repeated on your list.
Yeah, it's a good question. You want me to check the Ace Air in particular?
Sure.
Yeah, that would be really interesting to see. If this is batch 8, how many other times it potentially could have made it?
And sure. I know some of the – I haven't had all 8 batches. I'll say that. But every batch of the Ace Air that I've had has been really, really,
really good. Yeah.
And that's for triple New England IPAs, not exactly my – favorite or go-to style, just because sometimes these pack a little too much octane. Sometimes the triples get a little malty and sweet. But the Assayer, every time I've had different batches of the Assayer, they've all been super, super good from Root and Branch. And, you know, also on the opposite end of the spectrum, you know, they've made a lot of other really good beers and done a lot of different styles of them. One that, you know, we talked about recently was Castle, which is their single IPA one hop, and some of those were fantastic. So I think that is very interesting, Chase, if you do have the info on how many times the Assayer has been on there with different batches. I know I'd be interested in knowing and finding out.
Yeah, for sure. All right, I'm having to manually check this.
Oh, boy.
Oh, it's okay. It's all right. But I'm up to batch 7, and the only batches out for 1 through 7, the only batches that didn't make it were batch 1, batch 6, and batch 7. Everything else has made the list. Oh, so
2, 4, 6. Wow.
Yeah.
2, 3. Wow. Wow.
So, yeah, I would say pretty frequently. I can put that together, too, for future conversations.
So we are recording on a Sunday. This is before you put out the list for this week, the week that was, I should say. Give us some insights on what might make the list, what definitely will make the list of this week that you're going to put out, I'm guessing, later today.
You got it. So, yeah, we're looking at the week of January 13th through the 19th. And I've started chipping away at the list. It isn't completely complete, for lack of a better word, but a few that I've got my eyes on. The Warbler out of Del Mar, New York, put out an imperial stout called Early Bird. It looks like it's a barrel-aged stout in Elijah Craig and Heaven Hill barrels. And then also, this is kind of where it gets interesting, blackberry jam, maple syrup, Papua New Guinea vanilla, and then some Ethiopian Yirgacheffe coffee on there as well. So quite the combination of adjuncts.
That's wild. That's a wild one.
That is wild.
And for those,
for sure.
And for those who don't know where they're located, they're in that Albany area. I have not been there. You know, this would be – I still have yet to go to the New Fidens, or the Fidens, I should say. The other one was just you go there, pick up beer, and leave. But the actual Fidens tap room. So that's probably one that I'm going to try to check out when I make that trip up.
Nice. Love it. We'll have to coordinate dates, and maybe we can hang out there.
Nice.
Another one that I've got my eyes on – this shouldn't be a surprise to too many folks, but Double Barrel Mendy – released I think last Sunday, so that one's sitting at a 4.65 right now, with 66 ratings. That should be a surefire one to make the list.
The first Moore Mendy was an outstanding non-adjunct barrel aged stout, so not surprising to see that up there.
Yeah, nice.
And then no stranger to John and everyone on this call and probably listening, but Troon released a triple, Cerebral Fortress, that's sitting at a 4.63 right now. That's definitely a surefire one to make the list as well.
Yeah, I haven't heard of them.
Never heard of them. And then another one sitting above a 4.6 right now is North Park. I think we profiled them last week or 2 weeks ago, but this is bourbon barrel aged macaroons before dying. Their big macaroons day was I want to say last Saturday. And yeah, this one's sitting at 4.61 as well.
All of the
– That whole series.
All the Before Dying series are fantastic. And, you know, I feel like North Park was for a while known to be a stout brewery that also made IPAs, and now it's become their – an IPA brewery that sometimes makes great stouts. So it's like it's a little bit different as to the perception of the brewery. Let's just say they make great beer, regardless of the style. I think that's where it should be now when you think of them.
Amen. Yeah. Another one that I've got my eyes on is Inner Voice out of Decatur. We'll call it Atlanta, Georgia. They had a double release, and both of these were very Nelson-specific releases. But the one I've got eyes on is a triple from them called Nelson, 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 before Nelson's there.
Hopefully they don't get a CD from Vail from stealing their idea.
Yeah, right, for sure. But that one's sitting at a 4.57 right now. That's a monster rating. And then the last one that I've got eyes on, I think the last one is near unto you guys, Chilton Mill Brewing has beer called Farewell Cannonball. It's a triple IPA. It's only got 10 ratings, but it's sitting at a 4.56 right now. So probably it will probably sneak its way onto the list. And I think that might be everything that I've profiled. Let me see if I've got anything else bookmarked. Anything else from your seat that you guys have had eyes on?
It's how we kicked off the podcast today, which was on Swiss Bliss Day. And at least the way I'm looking at it right now, Barrel Age Swiss Bliss Grand Royale Batch 3 is currently sitting at a very comfortable 4.7.
But I would assume...
Nice, okay.
With the date ending, the week of... what is
Saturday?
The...
Yeah, does Saturday count?
Yeah, Saturday will count for next week's list. Okay, so it'll probably make next week's.
Interesting.
Okay.
Well, Chase, thank you so much for joining us. Always appreciate your insights and going through the lists. And we will talk to you next week.
Sounds great. Appreciate it, gents.
All right, everybody. And until next week, America, drink up and stay beautiful.
So messed up.